Welcome to Politics Unpacked, the series where we explain one of the biggest news topics of the day, then debate the issue with the TLDR team. In today's episode, we discuss the story from last week, that an independent report established that the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, had bullied civil servants that were working under her. Despite this, the Prime Minister and her boss decided to allow her to remain in her position. So today we discuss the findings of the report, the so-called chumocracy that defines Johnson's premiership, and the constitutional implications this report could have. This is Politics Unpacked. Before we get into the discussion, a bit of background. Following allegations in March from Philip Rutland, the permanent secretary to the Home Office, that the Home Secretary led an orchestrated campaign against him, due to his defence of colleagues who were allegedly mistreated by Ms. Patel, an independent report was commissioned to look into such claims. This was written by Alex Allen, who's an independent advisor on ministerial standards. The report looked specifically at whether the Home Secretary had broken ministerial code. This code, although not legally binding, should be followed by all ministers at all times. If a minister is found to have broken the rules, they're expected to resign. And there are no known instances whereby a minister has been found to break these rules and been allowed to remain in their position. Allen wrote the report, but the vast majority of it was not published for public consumption. The small segment of the report that was published established that although the Home Secretary had not harassed anyone, she had bullied. Specifically, it said the definition of bullying adopted by the civil service accepts that legitimate, responsible, and constructive criticism of a worker's performance will not amount to bullying. It defines bullying as intimidating or insulting behaviour that makes an individual feel uncomfortable, frightened, less respected, or put down. Instances of behaviour reported the Cabinet Office would meet such definition. The Prime Minister decided, though, that Ms. Patel did not break ministerial code, despite the report's finding. As the Prime Minister, it is up to Johnson to decide whether a breach has occurred. The report was produced for him to inform him on his decision, but it was his decision to make. Clearly, he disagrees with Allen's findings, much to Allen's dismay. In fact, he was so frustrated with the Prime Minister's reluctance to fire the Home Secretary that he himself resigned. So we'll discuss the report and what this means for Johnson and his administration right now. How do we want to start this then? Do we want to like put our cards on the table, say what we think, or do we want to tease the audience and
why don't you
let
say what you think?
Gauge?
You've got an opinion, and then I'll either argue with you or just agree with you, and we can finish there.
This could be really short if I say one thing and you're like, "Yep,
yeah." Sounds good to me.
I mean, I think the first thing I want to say is that it does make me a little frustrated. Let's not start with angry and opinions, but the whole situation is a little frustrating. I think especially, was it actually anti-bullying last week, or was that just something that Twitter was saying? Because if it was, that makes it almost worse on another level. But regardless, I'm not sure if I've actually started making my point yet, although I just started talking, but Ben can decide in the edit.
Bad cosmic coincidences, just
I want to know whether it's true or not. Was it actually anti-bullying?
It was Monday the 6th. It will happen from Monday the 16th to Friday the 20th of November. So I presume that's...
That would be it.
That was last week. Yeah. Okay. My broad point is that the whole situation's kind of disappointing in the way it's been handled. I think regardless of whether you think she should go or not, it's not a great look for her or the government. And the way that it's been handled, I mean, just the fact that the person who was running the report and organising the whole thing resigned based on Johnson's reaction, I think is pretty illuminating. But essentially, I think from the evidence we have, it certainly looks like her behaviour wasn't befitting of a minister and certainly seemed to have broken ministerial code. So in my opinion, based on that, I think it's fairly reasonable to say that she should have been removed. So are we going to have a long argument, Zach, or do you agree with me?
Well, I agree. I think I agree with your main point, which is that the way it's been handled is the particularly bad thing, which is the sort of Johnson, like, he didn't really give an explanation. He lent a bit on the fact that it was unintentional, that he just sort of said, I disagree and we're moving on.
I think that's the annoying bit, is that obviously when he said that, make a square, like the implication was essentially don't talk about it on social media. We're going to wipe this under the rug. And yeah, I mean, obviously I agree with that. I think that there are probably two, I don't know, this is controversial, but I do think there are probably sort of two sides to it. I think in that the Home Office does have form in this respect. The Home Office is famously not very responsive to its ministers. There was the whole, back when Tony Blair was PM, his Home Secretary described it as not fit for purpose. Is that the quote? I think it is. And yeah. Then a couple of years ago, that was the whole Amber Rudd Windrush thing, if you remember that, where she essentially resigned, but it was mainly because the Home Office was being useless. But I'm not sure if that justifies, you know, the quote from Priti Patel is calling civil servants fucking useless. So yeah, I'm just, you know what I mean.
Yes. It's not great. I mean, I kind of get your point, and I think that is the broad point that a lot of people have been making, is the fact that, it's even been described in the report as she became justifiably frustrated in many instances, which, I mean, as you say, I think it's the broad point that some people are making, that maybe the Home Office and the civil servants working there weren't entirely cooperative with her. And I guess that's a whole separate issue of like the duties of the civil service and something we haven't really discussed before. But I can see that if they were being obstructionist and that became frustrating, that's something worth getting angry about. I guess the broader question is, what do we actually know about what she did and said, and whether she crossed the line, and also where do we draw that line?
But Ben, you're going to say something. Yeah, I feel like I agree with you about where do you draw that line, but that's exactly what the report's there to do, is to draw that line and to determine where that is, and they determine that she crossed that line. And I feel like it builds into sort of the wider thing with Johnson, which is him protecting a particular inner circle above anybody else. And Priti Patel's one of the lucky few that are close to him that are going to be afforded the sort of relaxed expectations of her than others. You know, same with Cummings earlier in the year. If that was somebody else, you know, maybe a cabinet minister he wasn't as close with, he'd have been expected to resign. Same here. And it just feels like it's very much he's got a group of people he wants and he will defend them, and he has this sort of loyalty to them, which I don't think many former prime ministers would have had. They run it more sort of like a you know, more in sort of a professional manner, where they're expected to live up to these expectations, and if they fall short of those, then they're fired. And also, just before we move on, have you seen the Sun article about this? Because they took a completely, as you'd expect, a completely different tone on this.
No, I'm not sure I have.
Well, they were very much like, not, it's not a problem. And the exact quote was, presumably, sorry to bother you, but it's come to my attention that you're not actually very good at the job you're being paid to do. So would you mind awfully if I asked you, could perhaps try work a little harder, would have been preferable, but quite frankly, who's got the time? Was a quote from them.
That's such a good point. Go on, Jack, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, I really hope that's not in like the official documentation and handbook for the Sun's employees, because that sounds like a pretty grim place to work.
Yeah, this is the thing. And it goes on and it's saying that they've moved on. She probably shouldn't have said that, but, you know, it's not that much of a problem. It's what I'm kind of getting from that article, which I just feel like it's an odd way of looking at the situation.
Also, a pretty poor downplaying of the phrase "fucking useless."
Yeah,
yeah.
Those things are not equivalent.
Feel like a lot of the conversation around this, especially the people who are defending her, that is the key thing a lot of them seem to be doing, is downplaying what's happened, and also kind of excusing it based on both her race and her gender. I've seen a lot of articles making that point, and that she's just like a small woman, so how intimidating should she have been? And it's like, I feel like that really misses the point of, well, what bullying is. Like, it doesn't really matter what her physical size is.
She's in a position of authority. Like, what more is there to it?
Yeah, this is the one thing that actually really pisses me off, is how quickly this has descended into another culture war shibboleth. Mm-hmm. It's just completely stupid. It's gone, you know what I mean? Like, it should have been an open and shut case of, she said the phrase, I've sworn already. She said the phrase "fucking useless." She shouted at some civil servants. You know, open and shut. Either Johnson clears her, or
and as he did, or he fires her. But it's so quickly become one of those things about, like, oh, snowflake lefties in the civil service can't deal with this, and what hypocrites they are because she's Asian and she's a woman. And I just, it's so confected. Like, it takes so much effort to redirect the conversation in that direction.
I completely agree.
I also find it strange that people are saying that that a lot of sort of Tory MPs are trying to get behind her by saying, I've worked with her, she's hardworking and she's nice to me. It's like, so? It's like, great, she's nice to you. I'm sure she is. I've also seen
even funnier ones where they basically rephrase, they say something like, you know, pretty, she's lovely, but she can be direct. And you're like, that's not a great defence. You don't want to just use a like polite synonym for a bully.
Yeah. Also, it's like the people who are saying all these things tend to be people who are either on her level or closer to her level in government. And it's like, obviously she's being nice to you. Like, you're like similar level colleague. Like, you would expect her to be nice to you. It's the way she treats the people who are like under her in the organization and people who report into her that's clearly the problem. So it's like, just because she's mates with you doesn't mean that she's nice to everyone else and are good at her job or whatever. But I don't know.
I mean, yeah, the thing that kind of got me a lot was the amount of Tory MPs that were coming out and trying to use that as a defence and use the sort of, you know, she's nice to me, she's hardworking. Or there was Julie Marson, who said that she was doing a huge job and, like many women operating in a man's world, you have to be strong and decisive, which I feel like is kind of underplaying. Like, that's it's almost bad for that, because what it's almost like tantamount to saying, to operate in that world, you've got to bully. It's like, but that's not true. Yeah. Many people do operate in that world, do it very well, and do it without bullying. That's such a bad thing to equate it to say, to be a woman operating in a man's world, you've got to bully. It's like, that's not true. Many people, you know, many women who do work in, you know, high positions like Pretty Bell don't bully. And I feel like that's almost, you know, it's a bad thing to say. So
it's the same thing, isn't it? Is that sort of confected redirection into gender and race and culture war nonsense.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like, I understand the point a tiny bit in the fact that women are vastly underrepresented in leadership roles. They often feel like they're forced to kind of replicate male traits and whatever to be respected in those roles, which is obviously wrong and obviously something that society as a whole like needs to work on. But to say that because of that she therefore needs to go to like the craziest extreme of like male, like masculine and traditional masculinity of whatever you might think that is, to go to that extent and say like, okay, she needs to bully people for the people to pay attention to her. I mean, if that's true, I think that reflects a larger issue, but I don't think it is true. Like, I don't think that's necessary for her to get respect in the Home Office. She needs to abuse people who are working for her.
Yeah, I think we should Ben alluded to this actually at the very start, but one other thing worth pointing out is quite how rare this is.
Yes,
that Johnson rejected the findings from his ethics advisor. Because I think I'm right in saying it's never happened before.
Yeah, it's not.
Obviously, Alex Allen, who published the report, or who didn't actually... The report isn't going to be published. That's worth pointing out as well. The report in full isn't going to be published. No. We only have a very brief... I think it's his findings, quote-unquote, from Alex Allen. Anyway, his findings said that Pretty broke the ministerial code. And then Johnson rejected those findings and said that he didn't think she did. And Ben alluded to the start, it's never happened before.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, it is a short thing, that the snippet that they've sort of released, but it is damning. Like, it is bad.
Do you think it's that damning?
I think that some of the, if you just quote it in the in short, like some newspapers have done, it's not quite as bad as when you actually read it. I feel like there's the sort of longer, I mean, it's not that long, it's only a page and a half, but it's longer than what's in newspapers, and I think it's quite bad.
I read it as well, but I thought the opposite is true. I thought it's been sort of over, I mean, not, again, I'm not downplaying this, but I think that most of the reports omitted certain facts in the report. Like, for example, they did find no evidence of harassment. I'm not saying that's a good thing. You would hope not to find evidence of harassment. But they also, you know, it also points out that the Home Office was, as Jack mentioned, slow at times, and so her anger might have been justified here and there. And it does sort of slightly qualify or at least it puts the bullying criterion in very subjective terms. Like the final conclusion is that what she did can be described as bullying in terms of the impact felt by individuals.
Yeah, so the exact quote is probably worth saying. The exact quote is, it defines bullying as intimidating or insulting behaviour that makes an individual feel uncomfortable, frightened, less respected or put down. Instances of the behaviour reported to the Cabinet Office would meet such a definition.
And I think that definition's pretty indisputable, isn't it? Like, I don't think anyone can really have an issue with that definition. It's not only a pretty good definition of what bullying is, but it's also a pretty good description of what would be unacceptable workplace behaviour. And if she has done those things, I think it's hard to argue that that isn't a break of, or shouldn't be a break of ministerial code and shouldn't be a kind of disciplinable issue. I guess the question is, how far did she go? But as we've said, the report said that she did break the code and she did do at least some of those things on the list. So, yeah, obviously Johnson's decided to overrule it, which I think is kind of an interesting issue in itself. And I mean, Lord Evans, who's the chairman of the Committee on Standards in Public Life, was speaking in Parliament yesterday, and he kind of remarked on the issue of Johnson being able to overrule and make the final decision, and described it as like marking your own homework. And I think maybe it's an issue that's never really particularly come up before, because the Prime Minister has always just gone along with the advice of these kind of reports. But I guess it is kind of an interesting conversation there of, why is the Prime Minister the one that makes the final decision when it's their cabinet member? Like, you're always going to have some conflict of interest there. And if we're starting to see this, and if this does become precedent going forward, then it's a question of, are these reports and things actually any use? Like, sure, this isn't great PR for the Conservatives, that it might encourage Johnson to have made a different decision, but it certainly doesn't seem to have done. And if it is just a case of an independent report coming to a conclusion and then the Prime Minister ignores it, it's like, well, why are we even doing this?
Yeah, I mean, there's been calls, from what I've read, there's been calls to make the ministerial code law, and there has been for a little while, for I suppose, probably largely that reason. But they've still held to I think the other thing to point out is that they're held to other standards as well by virtue of the fact that they're MPs. They still have to, and this is the question that I had to both of you, because I haven't actually looked into this too much, but I was wondering what you both thought about this. Could she not be held to account by sort of House of Commons guidelines? I know that she was acting in a ministerial role, and she was acting, you know, the people that she was, you know, bullied was a ministerial department, but surely that would breach some form of House of Commons rules as well, which would mean that it's not the Prime Minister's call to make.
I don't know why you're asking us, unfortunately.
I don't know.
Neither of us are constitutional experts.
No. Well, I was just asking whether either of you knew, as opposed to sort of...
No, I don't know. But I mean, no, it's a good point. And like, who knows? Like, this could escalate into something else, but it certainly seems like they're trying to make sure that it doesn't.
Yeah. What do you think? Can we move back? Because I feel like I brought this up again briefly earlier. What do you make of the argument that it's sort of building into this sort of argument that Johnson is defending a small group of people that are close to him?
Go on, say the phrase that Farage and others love using at the moment. Call it a chumocracy.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Chumocracy. I love it.
I always want to do
that to Farage. He's good at those sort of things.
I want to make a video, like, or like a podcast or something, discussing this idea anyway, and just as an excuse to talk about the chumocracy more. I think it is a broadening issue, and I think it is something that people on both sides of the kind of political spectrum are getting angry about. And I think it could end up being a bigger issue for the Johnson kind of administration at large, the fact that there is this growing sense of maybe corruption's going too far, though maybe in some PPE cases not entirely too far. But there's certainly this growing sense of people always assumed the Conservative Party, and especially Johnson kind of esque politicians, people have always assumed that they're very cliquey, they focus on their friends, the people they went to university with, etc., etc. And that's like a common refrain that's kind of thrown around when it comes to the Conservative Party forever, really. And I think the attitudes of late, and the whole PPE issue, and how the coronavirus has been handled, plus like the coming situation and the Priti Patel situation now too, I think it is slowly adding validity to this argument. And I think the fact that it seems to be angering both people on the left and also both people further right than the Conservatives, the fact that this is a case that people in Labour and Nigel Farage are making, I think should be a concern for the Conservatives if this continues to be a narrative that's seen going forward. Mm. I mean, will it hurt them long term? Who knows? As I say, people have always said that, like, the Conservatives are just full of kind of Eton educated people who are all mates and like whatever, like that's a long-standing thing, and it hasn't hurt them before, or hasn't hurt them substantially before. No. So maybe chumocracy will fade and no one will care, but it does seem like it's becoming a bigger issue, and I think the case for it is becoming more and more clear as time plays out.
Mm.
I don't know if it will hurt them electorally, but the thing that pisses me off most about it is the thing that actually you were both alluding to a second ago, which is that well, I think this version of chumocracy is even more chumocracy than previously. And mm-hmm. I think that you can see this in the fact that Johnson is doing away with conventions in order to maintain political immunity amongst his chums.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's the thing that's annoying me. I don't mind that historically, you know, you'd have promoted the person you went to school with, as long as when they broke the ministerial code, they resigned. Or, for example, Gavin Williamson is another great example. You know, when their mm-hmm. department screws up, they take ministerial responsibility.
Yeah.
But the point is with this chumocracy is that that chumminess is sort of overriding pre-existing political norms and conventions. And that yeah. just slightly wears down the constitutional framework of the UK. You know, now that Gavin Williamson was just the perfect example of ministerial responsibility just being completely broken. Priti Patel is now a brilliant example of ministerial code being completely broken, and both these conventions are now collapsing. That's why I'm more annoyed at this
and democracy. And I feel like you can even take that further with the sense that a lot of the British Constitution is convention. So a lot mm-hmm. of it, like prorogation last year,
a throwback.
With proroguing Parliament. Wow. You meant to do that at the end of every parliamentary session. Johnson did it for his own political ends. You know, this year with Gavin Williamson's a good example, Priti Patel here, it's that Johnson started to go against these political norms for his own political benefit. And if that becomes a trend, then there's a lot of issues with the British Constitution, because a lot of the things that, as I said, a lot of the things that have happened as a result of convention, and there's no requirement for a Prime Minister to do it. All of these things, are showing that sort of conventional nature of the Constitution might need to change in the future to restrict Prime Ministers sort of taking advantage of the system, as we've seen with Johnson. We'll have to see how much further that goes. That's probably, more of an extreme argument to make. But
it's the right argument to make. I think we should be worried about this. And I think this is particularly fascinating, and it's true in the US as well, is how little this is a different conversation, so we might not go into it. But the reason I'm particularly worried about it is how little electoral pushback politicians seem to receive
exactly.
for mm-hmm. breaking constitutional conventions. And I think the assumption was for a very long time, even going up to like Cameron, was that the Conservatives were worried that if they broke constitutional conventions, if they let a minister stay on despite the fact they bullied someone, they'd face electoral pushback. But I think essentially because the electorate is that much more divided, there is that there is less movement in the middle, they don't really face any electoral consequences. And fundamentally, that is the motivating factor for political change. So that's why I'm particularly worried about it. I think it's possible.
And I also think that people are more concerned now after the Brexit saga with Theresa May, that they want somebody who can just get the job done. And I think there were polls actually to show this, that people were more wanting politicians just to get the job done, get us out of the European Union, all of that, than follow conventions, than following constitutional conventions. They don't care too much if you break what they perceive as small constitutional conventions, as long as they get the job done. And that was certainly seen with the prorogation. The fact that that happened like a few months out from a general election as well, and it didn't hurt them, I think was the sort of ultimate evidence of that. So yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the previous politicians sort of assumed that if you broke those, you would suffer electorally, but that's just not proved to be true at all.
Cool, nice and gloomy. You got anything to say, Jack? Are you happy?
I'm just depressed now.
Yeah.
No, I definitely agree. And I think that we are potentially seeing an erosion of those kind of assumptions and also some of the constitutional strength. in those kind of, like, just the fact that people made those assumptions was the strength of kind of the unwritten constitution that we have, was that people believed those things were really consequential, and therefore they weren't willing to break kind of unwritten rules out of fear of that. And maybe it always was kind of naive, especially in the modern era, that people would care about that. And maybe people have suspected for a while that it isn't as consequential as maybe they thought. But I think, as you say, Ben, the last few years and months, both in the UK and abroad, have kind of shown people are so divided at this point, they just want to get a win for their side, or they want to get a policy they like passed or whatever. They care more about that than the long-term consequences, which, but, I mean, makes sense. Like,
I was just going to say, I think the it's important to point out that I don't actually think that this is a function of an uncodified constitution, because this happens everywhere, because every constitution has a degree of malleability to it. And the point is that electorates don't seem to care that much if you push a constitution written or unwritten to its limits, as it seems to be true in the US. And it's actually true in, you know, the rest of the world as well, places like Poland, Hungary, that sort of thing. And in the end, it's sort of, now that it's happened, it sort of seems obvious, doesn't it? Like, did we really expect the people to give a crap about ancient constitutional conventions? But yeah, it turns out they don't.
Well, as I said in one of the last podcasts, are the good old days of individual ministerial responsibility. But they are good old days.
We had to put that on a t-shirt, Ben. That feels really quotable.
You're such a merch merchant. It's unbelievable. You just see those opportunities whenever they come up.
I mean, we can remind people at this point now, you've brought it up, Zach, it wasn't me, that there is a Black Friday sale on the website, and it's probably linked down below.
But my poor family is just going to get endless to be unworn TLDR merch.
To be fair, that merch you just spoke of, Jack, maybe if enough people wear those shirts, politicians will get it through their heads that you can't break, you know, that there might be electoral consequences for breaking constitutional conventions.
I think we need more t-shirts than we're likely to sell to really make
we need a lot of
change.
Don't get me wrong, I am saying we need a lot of t-shirts, but
a few hundred thousand, then maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's unlikely.
All in the Westminster area. You really just want them walking around.
Yeah.
We need discount codes just for the Westminster area, is what I'm saying.
All right, are we done on that one then?
I think we're done. Until we come back another day to discuss the Chumocracy in detail, I think we're done. And I mean, ultimately, I think it's probably worth saying that no one's arguing that Priti Patel's job is easy, and no one's arguing that there isn't some frustration there. But I think we broadly agree that maybe that frustration was taken out in the wrong way, and it's certainly kind of troublesome the way that this seems to have been swept under the carpet, or at least attempted to. I think it's interesting the media and people have talked about this so much. But the attempt from the government to make this a non-issue, I think, is almost as worrying as the issue itself.
Also, we should say that Johnson is not publishing a report.
Yes, which
he's
is
decided to,
worrying too.
Right, yeah. Again, no electoral consequences.
Stick it on a t-shirt.
There
publish the report. We want the PDF.
You want the PDF to be the worst thing on a t-shirt. You could do all variants of it, like, we want the CSV file. Give us the MP4.
Amazing. Well, that's a new line sorted.
Oh, beautiful.
I think we're done there.